The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, we unpack President Trump's meeting with Pope Francis with three experts, all of them often called on by the media, including by Reasonably Catholic, to opine about contemporary Catholic matters. They are Christopher Hale, Executive Director of Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, College of the Holy Cross Religious Studies Professor Matt Schmalz, and National Catholic Reporter, columnist, and books editor, Jamie Manson. First, though, a couple of public service announcements. Mark your calendars that on June 10th, the Archdiocese of Hartford's annual Bishop Peter Rozaza Social Justice Conference will be held at St. Thomas Seminary in Bloomfield, Connecticut. This year, the theme is Rooted in Faith, One Family Under God, and it will feature as its keynote speaker, Sister Ruth Rosenbaum, founder and executive director of the Center for Reflection, Education, and Action, or CREA, which is based in Hartford. She will share her expertise on the impact our purchasing power has and help us recognize just how powerful we are through our beliefs, voice, and actions. The conference's 12 workshops will address issues affecting those on the margins of society, Pope Francis's favorites, immigrants, refugees, and the homeless, and will also call attention to such local issues as Connecticut's juvenile justice system and the demand side of human trafficking right here in our state. The closing keynote, What's a Believer to Do?, will be given by the Reverend Joseph Donnelly, who has experience not only as a pastor and retreat leader, but as a teacher, hospital chaplain, and spiritual director. The conference admission of between $20 and $40, depending, includes workshop materials, lunch, and refreshments. For more information on how to register by the June 6th deadline, visit CatholicSocialJustice.org or call 860-242-5573. I'll also post this information on the ReasonablyCatholic.com website. My next shout-out is a plea for your support of WESU's Spring Pledge Drive. Please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and give what you can. Keep strong, independent, community-supported radio, which airs such unusual programming as this very show. Now more than ever, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, it matters. Any little bit you can give is a great help. For a donation of any size, in fact, I'll add to WESU's Way Cool Pledge Gifts your choice of an autographed book by one of three authors who have appeared on Reasonably Catholic lately. The first is If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse? Questions and Thoughts for Loud, Smart Women in Turbulent Times by Gina Barreca. Confessions of a Secular Jesus Follower, Finding Answers in Jesus for Those Who Don't Believe by Tom Krattenmaker. Or I Heart Francis, Letters to the Pope from an Unlikely Admirer by Reverend Donna Scopper. Those three authors pretty much epitomize the kind of programming that we bring you here at Reasonably Catholic. Just include your choice of the book on your pledge form or contact me through the ReasonablyCatholic.com website. Thanks in advance. Now let's turn to Christopher Hale of Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good. Welcome, Christopher Hale.
Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate being on the program.
Well, we just wouldn't be a true Catholic-themed program if we didn't take up current events like the president meeting the Pope. And what to say. This particular president meeting this particular pope adds extra reason to look at it. So what's your take on it, just off the top of your head?
You know, I think the first time really Pope Francis and Donald Trump came into orbit with each other was in February of 2016. I was actually down in Pope Francis' trip to the border of the United States and Mexico. And he, on the plane back, he was asked a question about Donald Trump's proposal to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. Now, interestingly enough, the reporter does not say Donald Trump's name, nor did Pope Francis say Donald Trump's name, but he said that building a wall isn't Christian. And Donald Trump took that as an opportunity right before the South Carolina primary, where, quite frankly, many folks aren't big fans of Pope Francis and slammed the Pope, that it was disgraceful for a faith leader to question another person's faith, which is ironic in itself to me. But they definitely did not start out on the right foot. Almost immediately thereafter, though, Trump toned it down a bit and said, you know, I don't want to fight with the Pope. But I think that was the framework that which I saw this meeting and everyone else saw this meeting between Donald Trump and the Pope. I think there's one thing that we should consider here that maybe not overlooked at first. Obviously, in worldview and ideology and temperament, these men have very little in common. They do have one thing in common, though. In a lot of ways, their elections buck the traditions from which they come from.
So true.
Represent an upheaval of those traditions. And some would say represents a rise of the populist currents within those traditions, within American democracy and global Catholicism. I think, I hope, and I think that Donald Trump has a lesson here. Populism in and of itself is a neutral thing. It's how you use it for the common good that really comes to measure the quality of it. And I think that Donald Trump, with the populist movement, with his troops in sorts who are dead heart Trump supporters, he can influence them in ways that are profound. And I hope maybe in some capacity he saw Francis and has learned just, you know, one inch, to move one inch on some of these questions and issues. I think the big issues that came out on the table were that are areas of disagreement. The most notable one to me was climate change. And Pope Francis presented Donald Trump his 2015 encyclical on Laudato Si, Care for God's Creation.
Which I'm sure President Trump is reading even as we speak.
He said he would. We'll see if he does. But I think the big thing that we're going to see is he going to simply pull out of the Paris Accords? Is he going to stay inside and keep inside the tradition of the American people on this and keep what President Obama did? And that will be the first judgment.
We should say that we're recording this on Monday, and this will air tomorrow, Tuesday. And who knows, something may happen in the meantime. A tweet may go out that says what he's decided about those accords.
For sure. He said there was reports that he had told folks he was done with the Paris Agreement, but he tweeted yesterday that he's still mulling it over.
Right. Watching the actual meeting of the two, did you have any impressions?
I did. I think one of the things that people are looking at is there's this iconic photo at the end of the encounter between Pope Francis and Donald Trump. And Pope Francis has what would be called a dour face on him. I think it's important to note, to overplay this is problematic. That is Pope Francis's common face that you see that he has in meetings. We're so used to seeing him smile, but those are actually in what you would call non-stage settings. Those are in informal encounters. But in official photos, he doesn't like official photos. And so in official photographs with him and world leaders, that's a common face to see. You know, one thing that's all interesting is I don't think there's quite a bit of chemistry between Pope Francis and Donald Trump. There was seemingly chemistry between Pope Francis and Melania Trump. And one of the interesting things that came from this encounter was there's now a claim out there by a Melania spokesperson, First Lady spokesperson, that she actually is Catholic. We don't have any records of her being baptized Catholic. But if she is Catholic, she'd be the second Catholic first lady ever behind Jacqueline Kennedy. So that's something I think that will be an interesting story that brews this week. I know there's folks investigating this and seeing, you know, is she just a self-identified Catholic or is she baptized and have some elements of practice of the faith?
Right.
But I think the encounter was what you expected. Nothing less, nothing more. Anyone expecting bombshells weren't going to get it.
The gift of Martin Luther King's writings. Do you think that was an unusual or expected choice?
It was interesting. I hope it communicates in some ways the type of leader that Donald Trump is trying to be going forward. One of the things that's interesting to note about that is I was intimately involved in a lot of the planning and the conversations between the Obama administration and Pope Francis during his visit to
really?
The United States
wow.
in 2015. And I have to say, one of the areas that I would say that Francis is not familiar with as much, and he tried to learn, I know that and he even mentioned Martin Luther King in his speech to Congress. He's not really familiar with as profoundly with the racial injustices in the United States and race relations at large. It's not something he was intimately familiar with. And so I sense that this gift was given because Pope Francis has had an increasing desire to learn more about this topic and Martin Luther King in particular.
You know, I can't resist adding that one hopes he has an increasing desire to learn more about the feminist movement.
Yes. No, I think I think those who hope that, I don't think your hopes are completely lost. Look, I think Francis has made comments that are heavily problematic, even in the question of good company, but particularly about the idea. He said in 2013, he was asked, can women be priests? He replied with a strong no, which is not really unexpected, but he said a comment that I found problematic. I think he's maybe reconsidered. He said that there needs to be more women theologians in the church. There needs to be
a theology of women.
Yes, you got it right. A theology of women. I thought that was heavily problematic because it's there. It's not, it might be hidden, but it's there. It's well within tradition. It's strong in tradition. And so the issue is not a new theology of women per se. It's rediscovering what's there, both current and past. I hope really this new commission that Francis is doing on studying the question of women in the diaconate provides him an opportunity as the Bishop of Rome to really see what's there within his own tradition.
Curious, Chris, did you wince as I did when Pope Francis said to Melania, are you feeding him this special dish from her country?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of interpretations of that. I didn't know what to make of it. One interpretation was he was calling President Trump overweight.
Yes.
What are you feeding this man? But also, of course, the notion that was Melania's role, to simply feed the man.
Right.
I don't think he was fat shaming. I can see the problematic tone towards just viewing her in this prism of being a caretaker for
you
dogs.
Know, yeah. I think that's how he sees women, is kind
yeah.
of servant.
He's not there yet. I understand that. And I think the reality of it is, we talk about Donald Trump, you know, he's 70 years old. He's not going to change. I think Francis might change a little bit, but he has 80 years on him, and 80 years is a lot of history to apply to a man. So any kind of change he has, it's going to be evolutionary and not revolutionary.
Because you say you were so involved in the meeting between the Pope and President Obama, I'm curious if there's anything interesting there to tell.
I think the big thing that was noteworthy was the mutual admiration between the two men. You know, President Obama told me to my face several times after Pope Francis' election in March 2013 how much he deeply respected Pope Francis. He always had respect for the papacy and the Catholic Church itself. It's noteworthy that his first job out of college, President Obama, was with what today is Catholic Charities or Catholic Campaign for Human Development. He worked for the Catholic Church in the South Side, organizing South Side of Chicago. He's always had deep respect for the institutional church. He loved Joseph Cardinal Bernardine in Chicago. And in a lot of ways, you could argue that Pope Francis is the papal embodiment of everything that Cardinal Bernardine stood for. So there's deep admiration. And I think on the Pope's side, I think that trip became very skeptical. That trip was planned by his predecessor, Pope Benedict, for the World Meeting of Families. Wasn't immediately clear that he was going to keep the appointment, if you will. And he had skepticism towards the United States for a variety of issues, like many South Americans do. However, I think, from what I know, he was surprised by the embrace. He thought that his message may not be well received in the United States, but I think it clearly was.
Yes.
And I think he was surprised by the American people. He said that he found the D.C. contingent to be polite, the New York contingent to be fun, and the Philadelphia contingent to be overzealous, but in a good way. He found deep admiration and love from the American people and for the American people.
I wonder if he misses President Obama.
I think a lot of us do. I think that he saw in President Obama a willing and able partner on issues that clearly Donald Trump's not going to be able to work with him on.
Yeah.
But I think as Catholics, I think the best thing we can hope for is that in some way this encounter moved the man an inch, you know? In the Christian tradition, we hope against hope. And so that's what I'm doing, and I often say that I kind of view Catholic's position in this democracy to be like St. Thomas More. We will pray for the president, but we will be his loyal opposition, mm-hmm. and we will serve God first.
Ah, perfect note to end on. Welcome home from Cuba, Christopher. We're going to talk about that on an upcoming episode. Until then, all the best.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You all have a great day.
Bye-bye. That was a chat with Christopher Hale of Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, unpacking President Trump's meeting last week with Pope Francis. Up next, College of the Holy Cross Religious Studies professor Matt Schmalz. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from community-supported, that means you, WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment with Matt.
Hello, my name is Evelyn Benoit. I listen to Reasonably Catholic because Maria is a friend of mine and also because I'm fascinated by the topics that she brings. It's a variety. It could be from Father John Baptist, who's a 90-plus-year-old passionist priest who's dynamic and full of life and energy, to people from New York and Boston and even other countries that she magnificently finds. And it's just a very enlivening, interesting program. Of course, all these non-commercial programs need support. So if you could possibly send anything, the station can really use the support. And that is WESUFM.org. Thank you for listening.
Welcome, Matt Schmalz.
It's great to be here.
You're kind to come back.
You can't keep me away.
So. I'm sure you've been busy on the Trump-Pope front.
Yeah, we're really through the looking glass with Donald Trump, and everything is strange, and the meeting with the Pope was stranger still, it seemed to me.
Tell me, what do you find strange about it? Where to begin, right?
Right. Where to begin with someone like Trump? I think he gave the Pope copies of Martin Luther King's writings and speeches and so forth, and I wish Trump would read them himself as opposed to giving them to the Pope. I just don't think that Trump is able or willing to seriously engage any of the points that the Holy Father makes about our obligations to each other.
Speaking of the gifts, what do you make of the Pope's offering to the president?
Well, that was interesting. We'll see how things develop. But I think for Donald Trump, this was basically a media opportunity and not something that he really took seriously beyond that.
Oh, but it was great. It was great. And he'll never forget it.
Right, right. I think from everything that we've seen so far, our president has a very short attention span. So whatever happened in the meeting and whatever happened afterwards in his own reflections will quickly dissipate, I think.
What about the bringing along an entourage?
Yeah, well, I mean, Trump, it seems to me, is not so much a family man, but someone who wants to keep things in the family because of loyalty concerns and so forth. But it just seemed kind of unseemly in, you know, on a number of levels, as though this was, you know, kind of a potentate or an autocrat who was, you know, bringing his, you know, rest of his family members along for the ride. It, you know, it was an interesting photo op, and some interesting photos came out of it. But apart from that, I certainly don't expect anything substantive. Though it is interesting, many Catholics supported Trump and still support him, so I'm wondering what they would think about it.
Maybe I'm naive, or maybe I'm just feeling sorry for Melania, which my husband says I should spare my sympathy for worthier people. But I thought it was kind of touching when she asked Pope Francis to bless a rosary. That surprised me.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's really nice. And, you know, I think Melania certainly has shown that she's rather ambivalent about the position that she's in, both being spouse to the president and being first lady. And I thought it was very nice that she asked for a rosary to be blessed. And I think we can look at that as something sincere and something that reflects her humanity and so forth. It's not as though any of us really know her very well, so
right.
I wouldn't venture to judge anything beyond that.
I'm going to be talking with Jamie Manson of the National Catholic Reporter after I finish torturing you. But I'm curious what you make of Pope Francis's fastening onto Melania and asking her about what she cooks for Trump.
Well, there are a couple ways to look at that, I suppose. I mean, in one sense, it doesn't seem as though anyone's doing any kind of cooking, you know, within the family, as far as the Trumps are concerned. And you could, you know, understand it as kind of small talk. You could understand it as kind of archaic, you know, borderline sexist in a way. You know, I think it was probably small talk and trying to make some connection with the Pope conveying his knowledge of Slovenian delicacies or something like that. So, anyway, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, apart from something confrontational, both parties in this case had to stick to small talk.
Right. You know, the pundits previous to the visit were saying where the real rubber will meet the road is when the, what to call them, underlings meet separately from, you know. Do you have any thoughts there?
I don't know. It's hard to see where there could be substantive cooperation. The positions that Donald Trump has charted out are in many ways diametrically opposed to where Pope Francis has charted course for the Catholic Church. I can see certain conservative bishops within the United States supporting Trump and supporting some of his initiatives and so forth. But it seems as though there's very little that can be shared and very little room for cooperation given the positions that this president has charted out. So the underlings could maybe talk and so forth, but it's very hard to see areas where they can work together, at least as far as I'm concerned and I see things now.
You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday and saying I'd be talking to folks about this, and this was someone who wasn't really tuned in. It was kind of a college student, not really focused on what's going on in the rest of the world outside that bubble. And so he wanted to know, well, what's going on with the Pope and Trump? And I said, well, you know, they disagree strongly on certain key issues, such as building a wall to keep out immigrants and whether global warming is, in fact, a hoax. You're right. I mean, when I heard myself saying this, I thought, what the heck are these two even doing in the same room?
Yeah, well, the Pope is Pope for everyone, so we'll see. But certainly, many of the pictures that came out from this meeting are really bizarre with, you know, Trump is the only one who's smiling and everyone else has frowns.
Yeah. Now, do you think that was strategic on the Pope's part so as not to seem to be endorsing him?
I don't know. I mean, I think for the Pope, this is one of the obligations of office that he probably wasn't too enthused about. But I don't really sort of see him thinking beforehand about making a scowl or a frown. You know, to communicate his distaste with things. I just think it must have been very awkward.
Yeah.
And everyone was kind of, you know, overwhelmed by that, except our president, who managed to put a big toothy grin on things.
And what else did you find bizarre about the pictures coming out of it?
Well, I thought there were a lot of interesting memes about, you know, the Pope pushing away Trump's hand or something like that. I mean, the way in which Melania pushed it away in Israel. You know, I just think as a, you know, the whole thing was intended as a photo op. And even on the level of a photo op, it didn't come out very well. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But it seems to me that there's always going to be tension between the Vatican and this White House. And whether or not the Vatican has any influence is a question that remains to be answered, I think.
Well, just tapping your historical knowledge, do you have any recollection in modern times or any times of presidential and papal meetings that were at all memorable?
Let's see. I'll certainly always remember John Paul II's first visit to the United States, where he had a mass in Boston and so forth. But, you know, I don't... nothing really comes to mind as being a really memorable meeting, though there has been history of behind-the-scenes goings on and cooperation between the Vatican and the White House. I think most notably during the pontificate of John Paul II, when Reagan was president, there was some cooperation with regard to events in Poland and so forth. I think these are basically photo ops, and the Vatican doesn't necessarily have the kind of global influence that it once had, though it can open up channels of communication in countries where the United States doesn't have a very strong diplomatic presence, but I don't see any initiatives coming like that from the Trump administration.
Speaking of diplomacy and diplomats, what do you think of Callista Gingrich being the ambassador to the Vatican?
Well, I thought one of the most interesting comments about this that I read, and I forget who wrote it, was that given everything that the Pope has said about divorced and remarried Catholics being welcomed back into the Church, that Callista Gingrich is, oddly enough, a Pope Francis Catholic, whether she thinks she is or not. I'm certainly, you know, uncomfortable judging Callista Gingrich or anyone and their family life and their personal history. I just wish they would have someone who's a little more qualified and knows a little more about not only religion, but the place of religion within global politics and so forth. But so I think it's, on one level, a very odd appointment, but on another level, probably something you could expect from a president such as we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a few minutes. Do you have any final thoughts on Trump and Pope Francis? I mean, putting those words together in a sentence seems so strange, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, I just, I'll be honest here. You know, everyone I talk to, I say I can't imagine, you know, how we reached this point. It's like we've gone through the looking glass. But I do think it's very interesting that certainly the most liberal or the most progressive, quote unquote, leader in the Western world is now the pontiff of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And that does show how things have changed, I think, where you would have said, I think, before the election of Pope Francis, that the Catholic Church was a bastion of conservatism and tradition, and now it's kind of on the cusp of advocating for real changes in Western society that meet with progressive values. So it's just another example of how quickly things can change on the global stage. And one could hope, too, then, that things can change in the United States, where we will finally have a leader who reflects the best of American values rather than someone who plays upon our worst instincts.
You know, I'm always curious to know what your students at the College of the Holy Cross say. Any vibe there?
Yeah, there is vibe. I mean, I try very hard in my classes to make it a safe space, which means also making it a safe space for Trump supporters. But I have to say that I found very few Trump supporters, and many more people, regardless of their specific political affiliations, who are very concerned about this presidency and what it reflects about the United States.
Hmm. Now, is that unusual? I had a sense of Holy Cross as being slightly conservative previously.
Yeah, I do think it is unusual. I mean, certainly at Holy Cross, I think, like many other religious schools, the faculty is more liberal, the students are more conservative. But I think regarding President Trump, even conservatives recognize that he's just not a person who's up to the task of being president. And that if you really want conservative values in the White House, you need to look beyond our current president to someone who's actually qualified to do what the office demands.
Well, on that note, I'm going to let you get back to your real life. Always
okay.
A pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
I'm very grateful. Take care.
You
Thanks
too.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a visit with College of the Holy Cross Religious Studies Professor Matt Schmalz. If you're just joining us, we're unpacking last week's meeting between President Trump and Pope Francis with three experts. Up next, National Catholic reporter, columnist, and books editor Jamie Manson. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from community-supported WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment with Jamie.
I'm Barbara Pavarnik, and Reasonably Catholic has been part of developing a mature and amazing Christian conscience and challenge to where we're going in the future of the church. And that really has been extraordinary through the example and the voice of so many of the participants and speakers on the show. One of the things that I think Reasonably Catholic does is offers a deeper and more intimate appreciation of the inclusiveness of the Catholic viewpoint. Often so many Catholic voices have been silenced or marginalized, and Reasonably Catholic really answers that challenge. It's a voice in the church in Connecticut, the church at large in the world. So please support this amazing show, WESUFM.org. Our faith inspires us not only to pray and contemplate, but to work for what we believe.
Shadows, and it has some source of light. Blindness, blindness inside.
Jamie Manson, welcome back.
Thank you, Marie. It's a pleasure always.
So tell me, what are your thoughts regarding, weird as it is to put them in the same sentence, President Trump and Pope Francis?
Well, it was a very brief meeting, is my understanding, and it was characterized as cordial, which some Vatican insiders say suggests that it wasn't a warm meeting like he perhaps has with other world leaders.
Interesting. Chilly.
Yeah, or maybe very, very formal. Seemed to me Trump seemed to be very over his head.
Yeah.
His facial expressions were really interesting to watch.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, smiling excessively, looking awkward. I love some of his comments. As someone who's from Queens, too, you know, when the Pope asks him to be a bearer of peace in the world, he says, yeah, we can use peace, which is a real, you know, when you speak to a non-native English speaker, to use a real Queen, that's such a Queens, we can use that, you know. So it just struck me, and then being handed all those papal encyclicals and said, well, I'm going to read them, you know, when he's very well known not to read, not to be a big reader. And the idea he's going to sit and read, you know, 300-page papal encyclical.
Yeah, and do you think he's read his own gift to the Pope?
I doubt it. But I did like he gave it to the Pope and said, I think you're going to like these. You know, again, I mean, he's got this Queen's thuggish way about him that I find funny because I'm from there, but I do wonder what the rest of the world thinks about it. I don't find it funny because it's coming out of the mouth of the president, but, you know, in my lighter moments, I'm just like, good Lord, he's like my uncle, you know? but anyway, we get off the topic of the Pope, but but it is, you know, I mean, I did say in his last speech, he did mention peace, Trump, so maybe the Pope is having an impact, and he's, you know, says now he's on the fence about the Paris Climate Accord, so
mm-hmm.
maybe...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was some influence. We can only pray there is. We need it, you know, to use that phrase, we need. We definitely need someone to get through to him. So, well, let's be hopeful.
Right.
For a moment, at least.
Anything else come to mind when you think about this?
Oh, well, I mean, I think, you know, there was a lot of talk about what Melania and Ivanka were wearing, you know, the heavy black dresses with the mantillas, which was, you know, pretty traditional. My understanding from my reading is that actually under Pope Benedict XVI, that clothing for women visiting the Pope started to get quite relaxed. Under Benedict, interestingly, and now with Francis, that's continued. So it's not absolutely required to wear a mantilla anymore. Queen Elizabeth didn't wear one in 2014, and Angela Merkel did not wear one at her recent visit. But it was very dramatic. And then to have the revelation that, you know, that Melania says she's a Catholic was interesting.
Yes.
There's no record of when she was baptized or made her communion, but no one, it's striking that no one even knew that at all, and then
yeah.
It came out sort of after the fact.
And the rosary, I thought that was kind of lovely.
Yeah, definitely, and I think he does give rosaries as gifts often. Apparently he gave one to President Obama, who then I think gave it to Nancy Pelosi. There was a story about that came out this week, because he knew that it would, Nancy Pelosi as a Catholic, it would have been meaningful to her. So it's, you know, not uncommon for him to give rosary. He gave a lot of rosaries out when he came to the U.S. In 2015.
I thought, maybe I didn't read it all, but I thought Melania brought a rosary for him to bless.
Oh, that could very well be. Yeah, that could very well be. That's probably right. I didn't read that, but that sounds right.
Which surprised me. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
That's so kind of lovely.
Yeah, and there were a lot of lovely moments with her, I think, that were striking when she went to the Gesù Bambino, the children's hospital that's
right.
run by the Vatican. And, you know, I was looking at photos from that, and it seemed very authentic, you know, her connection with the children.
Do you feel sorry for her?
I do. I have since November 9th.
Yeah.
I do, because my sense was, and this is purely my own speculation, that, you know, she was probably maybe preparing to leave him, you know. Because I think that revelation, you know, when he was on that bus,
yeah.
And those really raunchy things he said, you know, they were married
right.
when you know, that year.
Yeah.
And I believe she was pregnant with Baron, you know, and... Nobody. All these great Catholics and, you know, evangelical Christians who, you know, extolled marriage, idolized marriage, no one didn't seem to be a problem for them. You know, and here was a married man with a pregnant wife saying things like that.
And I think there was a separate occasion when he was reported by someone who said she'd been harassed by him, sexually harassed, that he said to her, "You know we're going to have an affair."
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't surprise me, you know, that she would feel trapped. But how could she? Once he won, how could she divorce him, right?
Right.
You know, and then it was interesting, all those scenes about her pushing away his hand, and then after that, you know, just went viral in the internet, you see him grabbing her hand everywhere and holding it very tight.
Right.
So
they say in one piece I read that she conspicuously grabbed his hand in the Sistine Chapel as
yes.
if to compensate, overcompensate.
Overcompensate. I believe it. And the Italian newspaper caught that photo. So I don't know. You know, it's who knows what's going on in that relationship.
Really.
You know, but obviously she has to be, you know, she has to remain married to him at least for now, I would imagine, whether she wants to or not. And again, it's speculation, but how, I mean, how humiliating
really?
To have revelations like that, you know, come out. It's so dark. And, you know, you have that moment, what's the first thing Pope Francis said to her, you know, when he met her? And it was really, to me, it seemed the first time he really loosened up or lightened up was when he shook her hand,
yeah.
Francis,
right.
He was looking a bit dour. And, you know, what's the first thing he says? What do you feed him? You know, and again, it's just, she cannot escape the gender stereotypes that the Pope reinforces.
Right. And that
says
much about what you and I have already talked about regarding the Pope and how he sees women. Should we not maybe exaggerate the meaning of this in terms of his, maybe he was just making small talk, as one commentator on this episode, this little postmortem suggested?
Well, a lot of people always want to give Francis a free pass when he makes jokes about women. And my problem is it's so consistent that he does it from early in his pontificate that I don't think we can take it that lightly. Because it's not like it's one joke. You know, there are records of many jokes he makes at the expense of women, about women as being servants somehow, about women being Adam's rib. You know, 2 months ago he's making mother-in-law jokes. And,
oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. You know, everyone wants to give Francis a pass, and I understand that. And, you know, Trump is such a foil for Francis. You know, I mean, talk about, you know, darkness and light. You know, that he makes Francis look, you know, even exaggerates Francis's great qualities even more.
Wow, it's so true.
Yeah, you know, so I don't think we have to take it lightly necessarily, because it's such a consistent pattern with Francis.
We can't forget his calling women theologians the strawberries on the cake.
Strawberries on the cake, yeah, or the big Adam's rib joke, or the jokes about, you know, how the servants and the bishop's servants are really the ones in charge. And, you know, it says something about how he sees women. And theologically, he has been very clear about, you know, that women have a very specific role in society, in marriage, in the church. And it's always a servant role, you know. And you know, and there's a lot of truth and humor.
Well, yeah.
You know.
And even being humorous, he said that apropos of the possibility of women deacons,
right.
that in ancient days they were pretty much just, you know, bathhouse attendants,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
not really right. deacons in the serious sense of the word.
Well, that's right. And don't forget that they were also in charge of looking at bruises on the bodies of women who were accusing their husbands of being abusers.
Mm.
That was their other role. He said he said in that famous interview with the that question and answer with the nuns that led to the commission on the papal commission on diaconate, those were the two examples he said he knew of,
yeah.
of deaconesses is what he referred
oh,
to them
God.
As. So it's just something to look at, you know, and because it's just, as I said, it's just so consistent. And again, Maria, as I've said in my writing and as I've said to you, this reinforcement of women, whether it's through humor or through theology, both of which he participates in, this reinforcement of women as servants or women in that role, servant role in marriage, reverberates throughout the world. It
yeah.
really does.
Right.
Because you're reinforcing women in a very specific place where men will always have power over them,
yep.
where they will always be in service to the male. and the impact that that has globally, we can say it's just a lighthearted joke, but it reverberates throughout the world for women, you know, who cannot break out of those positions and those roles,
right.
You know, and in many cultures, those roles are downright oppressive. So, and keep women in servitude and deny women education and deny women, you know, the right to, you know, start their own businesses or be on their own. So it continues to be problematic about this pontificate.
Boy.
You know.
What do you think of Callista?
Oh, well, you know, it's very disturbing, you know, to see that. And it just, I mean, I was always frustrated by the privileges Newt got, you know, in the church, you know, getting all those annulments, getting private lessons from the bishop in theology to prepare him for being received into the church. And now we see her getting all these privileges, you know, and she doesn't have any background. She's never been elected to office. She has no work in diplomacy. She has no theological background. So this is clearly, you know, someone getting, you know, having a lot of money and you know, that Donald owes Newt, you know,
right.
And this is how, this is just payback. You know, but it's just that, you know, a lot of these ambassador, you know, appointments are strange. I mean, I think the ambassador to the UK is the owner of the Jets. You know, what does he know about being an ambassador? But he's very, very wealthy, you know, and was a big contributor to the Trump campaign. Now, nobody made as much noise about that, interestingly.
Mm.
But I think he's just as unqualified, you know, to be in the, you know, especially with our relationship to the UK, you know, which is extremely significant. So I don't know. So there's always a tint of misogyny, too. I found that in the Betsy DeVos appointment also.
Mm.
You know, the people got even crazier about her than they got about some of his other most outrageous appointments, like Rick Perry to Energy. You know, so I always find that the women appointees get extra criticism and extra ire.
Just looking
even though
for
the men are just as inept.
Well, right. Just looking for the silver lining regarding Callista Gingrich, that I always want to say Flockhart.
Exactly.
Maybe she can't do too much damage as the Vatican ambassador.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in many ways, it's a ceremonial role. You know, but they can be powerful. I mean, one of her predecessors, Marianne Glendon, who was a very conservative woman, has, you know, had a lot of influence. You know, they're called on to do a lot of speaking engagements.
Yeah.
They tend to represent, if they're female, they tend to represent the female viewpoint at the Vatican, you know. And if they agree with these theologies, you know, about women, you know, about women's roles and complementarity and all those really damaging theologies that keep women from getting true equality in the church. If they, you know, if they espouse those opinions, then the church can say, oh, this is what women think.
Right. So true, yeah.
So that can actually be harmful in its own ways, you know. And certainly her predecessor, Marianne Glendon, did the same thing. So they can be called upon as an authoritative voice of women in the Vatican, where they're often looking for the right women, you know, the right women to give the right opinions. So it could be problematic.
You know, I love you, Jamie, but I always come away feeling worse.
Come on, I tell you this, I'm really fun outside this world. There are plenty of people being optimistic. There has to be a little balance.
Give
a little balance, you know.
And you do. What's pressing on your brain these days otherwise? Anything?
Oh, gosh, what is pressing on my brain? Well, definitely the diaconate decision is a major, major thing. This will be historic no matter how the decision is made. And I think one thing that's important to think about is that I think there's three choices that can be made by the Pope. Either to reject it outright and say, no, there's not enough tradition for this, there will be no female deacons. The other is to make some form of diaconate that's not equal to the male diaconate, which is what I think will end up happening.
Yeah.
And the third is to really restore the true diaconate and have women equal, female deacons equal to male deacons. They both will have major impact. If they reject it outrightly, I think it will be an exodus of women from the church, especially in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because diaconate isn't really used globally the way it is in the U.S. We've talked about that.
Is a decision imminent?
I don't know. I mean, I don't. There won't be any decision until September for sure, because the Vatican's ready to go on summer vacation now. They're preparing for that. Not much is done in July and August, and I don't think there's any word about decision coming in June. But who knows? But I don't think anything sooner than September. But, you know, I think you'll see a exodus of the women who are upholding the church, the women who have tried to remain faithful, tried to remain patient, the women who stayed. I think that will really be a nail in the coffin for a lot of them, and especially young women who are in school, who are still getting their theology degrees, hoping to have a real opportunity to use their gifts in the church. So that's really what's one to watch. Now, it could be Francis is very well aware of that and will make some sort of compromise, which would be that kind of, you know, form of diaconate, for a new form of diaconate for women. If, though, we get the full Monty and it's a real equal diaconate for women, which, again, because of complementarity, that theology, I don't see how that's possible, but who knows? I think that then you won't be able to hold back the spring. And there could be a lot more possibilities for women if that happens. So we'll see. But that's what's pressing on my brain, because that will be, no matter what the decision is, it will have a massive impact.
Well, I think we should stop on this pretty positive note.
Thank you, Maria. See, I'm capable.
We will certainly talk then when a decision comes down, and maybe even sooner. Maybe, you know, over the summer, you'll feel like coming on and talking about some nice, light, summery thoughts.
Sure.
I look forward to it.
Yes, me too, Maria. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. You can call me anytime.
You're the best. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Maria. Bye.
That was an interview with National Catholic reporter, columnist, and books editor Jamie Manson, who, along with Christopher Hale, Executive Director of Catholics and Alliance for the Common Good, and College of the Holy Cross Religious Studies Professor Matt Schmalz, helped us conduct a post-mortem on President Trump's visit with his entourage to the Vatican. If you missed any of the episode or would like to share it with friends, you can find a link to it at the ReasonablyCatholic.com website. One last shout-out for the Social Justice Conference on June 10th. Info is also at the ReasonablyCatholic.com site. And of course, a plea for you to support WESU by going to WESUFM.org/pledge. See you in a week when we talk with a monastery chef. Till then, this is Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening.
Arrivederci Roma, goodbye, goodbye to Rome, city of a million moonlit places, city of a million warm embraces, where I found the one of all the faces. Far from home, arrivederci Roma.